Hey, it's 18 minutes after 3 o'clock here on a Tuesday downtown. Still ahead in the show, former Black Bear and Kansas City Chief Mike DeVito talking Maine football. Eric Meehan of Bangor Wine and Cheese got this week's message in the bottle. Dennis Price with her entertainment report. And later in the show, we'll play the movie game and see how well you know your Tom Hanks movies. Right now, though, it's a chance to talk music. Mike Morisha has written the third in his series of books, The Vinyl Dialogues, Volume 3, this one entitled Stacks of Wax, talking to some of the people behind some of the biggest albums of the 1970s. And we're ecstatic to have Mike back on the show with us talking music. Mike, welcome.
Hi, Rich. How you doing?
Well, I'm doing great, thanks. I get so excited when a new volume of the series comes out because these are such great reads. It's my wheelhouse. It's my time. The music that I grew up with and absolutely love. But I think this one is especially important because, and you talk about it in the foreword to the book, you interviewed Natalie Cole, who passed away not long afterwards, from that, you realize that there's a sense of urgency because, as we've seen already in this tough year for music fans, we're losing a lot of these people at a rate that's not likely to change.
Yeah, and it's you're absolutely right. It does drive home the fact that that to make sure that these stories are preserved from that era, some of the stuff that I write about has been written about before, but some of it, you know, hasn't been written extensively about. And, you and I grew up in that decade, that era. And, it's evolved, Rich, to the point where I do kind of feel like a historian. And I do feel sort of a responsibility, since it's my era, to make sure I get those stories right.
Oh, there's no question about that. I think you're providing a great service here for an important part of our cultural history. And what I also like about your books, and I've told you before, is the diversity of it, that you cover a lot of artists and a lot of different genres along the way. And this book is proof of that yet again. And I want to start by asking about your conversation with Neil Sedaka, which is just a great story from a guy who was a big teenage idol in the 50s. And then when the Beatles rolled around, disappeared. And you focused on his comeback in the mid-1970s. And I was especially taken with how proud of he was about a song that I've always loved, The Immigrant, which was his tribute to John Lennon.
Right. And he was very proud of that song and that comeback, that entire comeback. I found with artists, and Neil was certainly one of these, that if you could find something that's an album that's near and dear to their heart, that they put a lot of passion into and it's really personal for them, that they're really willing to share those stories, and so that's why some of the advanced research is so important. Certainly I've picked the wrong albums a time or two to talk to artists about, but I'm getting to where I can get a pretty good feel about the albums that these guys will talk about, and that was one of them. Sedaka's Back from '75, I believe. And he was thrilled to be back. And I there's one quote in there, Rich, that I absolutely love. And he talks about how essentially the British invasion pretty much ended his career in the mid-60s. And he just couldn't find any work, and he wasn't making any hit records anymore. He wasn't writing any hit records for anybody. And he said, it was a great quote, he said, people used to come up to me on the street and say, "Didn't you used to be Neil Sedaka?" And I just, he wasn't saying that as a joke. He was serious about that. It was that bad for him at that point. And of course, in the chapter we reveal how critical actually Elton John was to helping Neil Sedaka come back in the 70s.
And also I love the fact that he gave away what turned out to be a huge hit because he thought the Captain and Tennille did a better version of it.
He did. And you know what? I've subsequently talked to Tony Tennille about that same record. And she's very flattered that Neil actually thinks that their version is better than his. And that will be a chapter featured in the next volume, and we can talk about that a little bit later on.
Now, you always you've interviewed Daryl Hall and John Oates a number of times, and they take up a chapter in the book as well. I was especially taken with the story about a connection between Hall and Oates and Sylvester Stallone. Can you explain that?
Yeah, unbeknownst to me, and that's the thing about these interviews, Rich, is that some of this information, even though I grew up in that era, some of this information is completely new to me too. And I'm always, I'm a real fan when I get that kind of information. But there was a song on the what's called the Silver Album, the Hall & Oates Silver Album, that from 1975 that still Sylvester Stallone had heard when the album came out, and it was about the time that he was putting together the Rocky film, and he called Daryl Hall on the phone and said, there's this song here that I really like off this album, and it was called Grounds for Separation, and Stallone actually was considering using that as the theme to this Rocky movie. Of course, neither Stallone nor Hall had written the Grounds for Separation, knew that the movie was going to be such a big hit, become such a big thing, the Rocky series. But it was considered, and Daryl admitted he didn't know why the deal eventually fell apart, but the song, the Hall & Oates song, was not used.
Mike, you also had a chance to talk with Art Garfunkel about his solo career, and especially of the great 1975 album Breakaway. Garfunkel, notoriously hard to track down, doesn't particularly enjoy doing interviews, but you really got him to open up.
Well, and I'd like to think, Rich, that I've learned something from doing all these interviews over the years and with the artists. And I had read, I had known in advance that Art was kind of difficult with reporters. And if you read some of the other stories that have been written about him, and I'm half and half on that. Sometimes I will read other writers' works, and sometimes I won't. I read other writers' works to get background information and get some information that's going on there that I can use. But I don't want it to influence what I'm going to write.
Right.
But in this instance, I had been aware with reading other articles that Garfunkel didn't particularly enjoy talking about Paul Simon. And so when I focused in on the album, as you recall, and the fans from the 70s recall, the Breakaway album actually features a Simon-written song called My Little Town. And that was on Garfunkel's solo Breakaway album, but it was also on Simon's solo album from that year, Still Crazy After All These Years.
Right.
So I was wondering how I was going to get him to talk about how that song got on his album and how Paul approached him with it and things like that. And the way I was able to do that was to actually not ask about it, in essence. And as he was telling me about the album, he mentioned it, gave me the opening, and so I essentially pursued it, not hard, but I pursued it the best I could without trying to offend him. And we went through the entire interview, and I got a lot of great stuff that I put into the chapter. And at the end of the interview, he said, you did a really good job of avoiding the Paul Simon questions. And then he proceeded to tell me, he proceeded to ask and answer all the Paul Simon questions. So I didn't even have to ask the question. Are you and Paul ever getting back together again? We're different people now. No, it's not going to happen. It might. Who knows? And he was conducting the interview with himself at that point.
We're talking with Mike Morris, the author of The Vinyl Dialogues, Volume 3, Stacks of Wax. You also caught up with a friend of our show. We've had him on a number of times, Eddie Money. Was your experience with The Money Man as crazy as ours have been?
I really enjoyed that one. As you probably well know, if you know Eddie, when you first talk to him, he's on his best behavior. And if he becomes comfortable with you, then the conversation can get substantially more interesting. And that was my experience with Eddie. As we went along, he was much more animated by the end of the conversation than he was at the beginning of the conversation.
Now, you also spoke with Harry Wayne Casey of Casey and the Sunshine Band. We had on, were you under the restrictions we were that Casey, we were told, did not want to talk about anybody that he had ever been in a band with?
I never was given any. I've interviewed him, I think, three times over the course of my career. I have never been given any restrictions. Again, though, he's one of those that if you do your research, you can kind of figure out the people he's talking about that he doesn't want to talk about.
Right.
It was a songwriting partner of his back in the day that had co-songwriting credits with him that ended up in some legal issues that he just doesn't prefer to talk about.
Well, it's so many wonderful interviews in the book and groups and individuals like Loggins and Messina, Jay and the Americans, Mark Lindsay of the Raiders, the Spinners, Jay Giles, Kinky Friedman, which was one of my absolute favorite chapters. And I love the title of it, Failing at Something Long Enough to Be a Legend.
Yeah, that's a direct quote from Kinky. And, he's one of those where I wasn't as familiar with his music. So that required a lot more research and listening to some of his stuff before I talked to him. But he's a very animated interview as well.
Who was the most surprising person of all the people you talked with for the book?
Surprising. I've been really fortunate in that most of the people are willing to talk, and most of them have. You know, you got to remember, I'm asking them about stuff that happened 40, 45 years ago. And many of them have tremendous recall of the details of some of the special albums that they made. But I don't know that anybody has surprised me a whole lot. I have learned over the course of doing these books that sometimes memories, fail us.
Right.
And fail the artist. I've had artists where I start asking about the album, and they'll say, now, which songs are on that album? And, of course, I'll have it on my screen, and I'll tell them what song to, that was our 17th album, and they all kind of run together. I've had that. So I always kind of have a backup album in mind. And oftentimes that works if the primary album doesn't work. So you do have to be prepared for that. Is that possibility.
Now, as you said, you've already done some interviews that will make up the next chapter, the next volume in the series, and I know that it was about every year and a half or so that you're coming out with a new one?
Yeah, that's what it takes to do the interviews and the research and the writing and the editing. Not quite a year and a half, between, about 15 months, I can get a new one out, so... every calendar year, certainly for the last 3 years, and hopefully for the next one.
Well,
for volume four, I'm going to actually go back into the 60s also. So volume four will include albums from the 60s and the 70s.
You've talked to so many great people. Is there anybody left on your bucket list that you haven't been able to track down yet?
Oh, yeah. Man, I would love to talk to Elton John. Mm. But the other would be Paul McCartney. A lot of people think that because I live in the Northeast that I would say Bruce Springsteen, and certainly he would be on it. But Elton would be at the top of that list. And the thing is, and I guess people like Art Garfunkel or Dale Hall and John Oates are sort of the same way. You wonder. I've often wondered what I'd ask Elton John that he hadn't been asked about already. The guys that have been A-listers for a long, long time. They talked about their careers for a long time, and I'm not sure what's left. I can tell you what I would talk to Elton John about, and that's the album Captain Fantastic. That's the one I talked to him about.
My favorite Elton John album of all time.
Yeah.
Well, you ask great questions, and you get great answers. The books are always a wonderful read, and Volume 3, no exception. Mike Morrish, The Vinyl Dialogues, Stacks of Wax, fantastic stuff. Mike, we love talking to you. Anybody who loves music needs to get the book and read all about it. Thanks, as always, for visiting with us.
Thanks for having me on, Rich.